Well, good morning, buenos dias. I'm really delighted to be here, and thank you very much for the invitation and just to be a part of this panel and just to know and to see the old friends and new friends too. So what I'm going to be talking in this morning is one of our projects that we have in terms of training leaders. So I'm going to be concentrating my talk in how and why we need to train leaders, and then I'm going to give an example of a project that we had currently. This seems much, but I'm going to be very, very quickly talking about some of these things. Why do we need to train leaders? Do we really need that? We're going to be talking a little bit, just touching about the global commitments, the need to reach health goals. We need to deal with current realities. In particular, one of our projects that I'm going to be showing you is the Border Health Leadership Project. The greatest challenge is how to have the right people in the right place. So we need to talk about a little bit about the need to have competent leaders. How to train the leaders right now? What are their characteristics? How do they learn? And then we're going to be talking about e-learning, blended learning. So that's a tool in order to train the leaders. And then one of the examples that I'm going to show you. Well, why do we need to train leaders? Do we really need to train leaders? So the first issue that I would like to touch is that we need leaders because we need to reach global commitments. And we all know that we are very close to the Millennium Development Goals that we're supposed to be reaching, like now in the next four or five years. And we really, in some of these areas, we're really behind. We really need leaders in order to really reach these global commitments. And when I'm saying reach is because sometimes, you know, if we look up average in these areas, we might think we are okay. But now when I'm glad that I was here in Angela's presentation, and I see that now the biggest challenge for our leaders is how are we going to be making this a reality in every county? It's not the country average. I'm talking about Mexico, for example. In some of these, you say, oh, we're pretty good. Yes, but if you go to the far south in Chiapas, you said that, forget it. I mean, we're just so behind. So it's not a matter of the whole average, but it matters in terms of how are we doing in our own communities. And for that, we need leaders to know the way or to lead us to the way. Another thing is why we need to leaders, because we need to reach health goals. In most of our countries, we are developing a big health systems reforms. And the leaders, they really need new skills. They need to know how to improve the health of the population with our current situation. We need to guarantee equity. We need to improve the efficiency of our system. We need to improve the management of the public health institutions. We need to achieve financial equilibrium for health systems. But we also need to deal at the same time with current realities. And one of the projects that I'm going to be showing you is that's because, for example, in Mexico and United States, we do share a border with a lot of problems. I mean, we have common problems in the border, and that's why we developed this project. But for example, in the very specific border area, well, we have problems with drugs. We have problems with unhealthy lifestyles, such as poor nutrition, inactivity, smoking, excessive alcohol, unsafe sex. So we do have this specific problem, and we need leaders in order to know all these problems and how are we going to be able to come across this. We also need leaders because most of the fundamental areas of the health system reforms are actually in non-medical areas. So our leaders were trained maybe in public health or in health or their medicals. But if you look at the new health system reforms, there are some areas that are non-medical areas, and our leaders, they don't know how to deal with them. So the greatest challenge that we have is to have the right people in the right places. So we need to have competent leaders. We need to have competent leaders in public health, first of all, and public health, it's a field that has been really reshaping, but all our leaders, they need to have at least a basic understanding of the five basic areas of public health. But they also, there's a lot of new emergent areas, so they need to be competent in things like global health, terrorism, bioethics, cultural diversity, and who knows who? I mean, who knows? I mean, every day we have new emergent areas. Also, our leaders, they need to be competent in cross-cutting competencies. Every day we know that we need more to have the vision, to have effective communication, to have creativity, to be good to solve problems, to work with groups. So all of this is taken is that how are we going to be able to train these leaders? There are so many things that they need to be really competent on. So let's look a little bit about the characteristics of our health leaders. Our health leaders, most of them, they have high level professional responsibilities. They are juggle between professional and personal demands. They have very limited time for continuing education. I mean, we want to train them, but they don't have time to be trained. They often cannot attend classroom-based programs due to their location. And they are adult. They are adults. So if we realize that they are adults, we need to think about how they learn. So we need to be beyond pedagogy, which is the science of how kids learn, to actually be talking about andragogy, how's the adult learning. And we know that adult learns how they learn. They are self-directed. They need facilitators rather than teachers. They need to be engaged to stay focused. They need exercises. They need discussions. They need problem solving. They learn if there are real-life applications that is relevant to their own situation. They are pragmatic, and they need to apply knowledge to immediate circumstances. So we have found that e-learning and also blended learning are a very effective option or tool for adult learners and our current learners. Why are we saying that? Well, we need to realize that physical classroom is no longer the only educational space. Learning occurs actually in different settings. Learning environments need to be flexible. There is a tendency to use different media and communication channels. There is a need to increase the possibility for the interaction. Students' different learning styles need to be taken into account. Students are in diverse locations. Students work. They need to move from knowledge to competencies, and this requires more than a physical classroom. So one effective educational process is all that takes into consideration adult learners and also the characteristics of our leaders is that if we go to e-learning environments, we can do a lot of things, this stuff, and we can really deliver effective education. For example, in an e-learning course, you can do very easily material to so the students can just do things. So we feel and we know that we learn by doing things. Well, that can be, of course, do in the internet. We know that we learn by interacting. So there are some tools in the internet that we can use to interact through wiki, to chat, through email, to repositories. We know that we learn by searching, and that can be done very well in the internet. We can send the students to search different topics, different issues in the internet. We know that we learn by sharing, and that can be very easily done in e-learning courses through using networks. So there are different formats. I'm just talking to you about very quickly about the three most common ones. The e-learning, which you know that's a completely electronic format. It's a distance education system which integrates the use of informational technologies and other pedagogical elements for training and education for online students. So everything it will be online if there is only an e-learning format. But we have also the blended learning, which combines both. When you have a course that I'm going to show you that our course is going to be in a B-learning strategy or format, where you have some materials virtual but some materials in person, and that's really combines the benefits of the two models. And we also have the mobile learning, which a lot of us are starting to begin doing some things and just sending all the presentations, the information to actually the mobile devices. So I'm gonna want to end up the presentation by showing this example that we are involved right now, and some of my colleagues are here in the room. This is an example of a professional training program. It is called Leaders Across Borders Program, which is a blended learning program. And this project was, we were involved with PAHO, with the Commission of the Health Border Commission, the Arizona Department of Health Services, El Colegio de la Frontera Norte, the University of Arizona, which my colleagues are here in this room right now, the CDC, El Colegio de Sonora, and we were involved in this program. So our purpose, and we were discussing this in the last maybe 2 years, we really wanted to put together a training course for leaders to improve the health of communities and promote health equity in the U.S.-Mexico border region. So what we did is that we came up with this structure of the diploma. Okay, this is a complete diploma, although we had 2 tracks in order to really go through it. So 3 of these modules are face-to-face education, and the other modules are e-learning. So the students can actually go to just to the face-to-face, and they will get a certificate for that. Or if they took the whole courses, the face-to-face and the e-learning, they will take another diploma. So that was a very successful initiative. We actually end up to having 18 students that took track 1 and 10 students track 2. So we have a total of 28 students actually completing the course. And the final projects were really very interesting because they were very community-oriented. They were really working. These were the examples of the project that they presented. We were maybe a month ago in the final presentations. So one of the projects were healthy lifestyles at Juarez, but in Las Cruces border. Another group engaged in binational strategy to reduce childhood obesity. Another group, Campo Saludable, who were talking about the healthy farms. And the other one talking about community health workers, promoters in terms of diabetes and oral health. So all of these courses, the groups were formed binational. There were students from the States and from Mexico. So I really think that that's a very successful story in terms of we can do things together, first of all. And I agree, we don't have to invent the wheel. We just came together, some of the academic institutions, to see we have this need, we need to develop a course. We did it, and we used technology in order to do that, but also face-to-face education. So I just want to finish saying that who dares to teach or to lead, but never cease to learn. So thank you very much.
They were leaders across the borders. There were people who actually are working in the communities or in the health systems in all the states across the border. So it was more or less like half and half. And I came here and Jenny's here for the same project. So it was more like half and half of the people from the states and Mexico. But all of them were involved in leadership positions across the border, but in both governmental or community or other initiatives, right?
Some in government, public health, some in more community-based organizations, or even other governmental sectors like our equivalent of social security and
right.
Department of Economic Security.
My first is a question to all of you. How many of you ever heard the term B-learning? Put your hands up. I may heard M-learning. How about the concept of andragogy? Okay. We've got a few. And there's a new language that we're bringing in. I want to make sure that we had an opportunity to see. And I was curious about, in the language issue, about trying to find common ground. Is there anything that you heard from each other that you had not heard before? Is there any terms that you might have heard?
Yeah, the andragogy and others.
And the concept of having methods or techniques to teach adults, according to dictionary.com, and so that this concept of adult learning is taking on, like pedagogy, is taking on its own sphere overall, recognizing that bringing it in here. The first set of questions I want to ask, is there any questions that you wanted to ask each other? Now, here you are in a panel, you've not been in a panel before I go out there for a general question. So something that you heard that you wanted to reflect on as our three panelists.
Yeah, oh, go ahead.
No, I was curious about Angela's presentation in the sense that in the community level, where do they go to actually access the services or the internet data? Do they have to go to the community can go to a place, you know, to do that, or they live?
No, they actually own the computers.
But when you mean own, where are they located? Where are the computers?
In their clinics, in their place, in their health departments, in the place they work. These people work in an organization.
Okay.
So even if it's a garage located organization, which we had a few, mm-hmm. they all own a computer.
Okay.
All.
So there already is the hardware infrastructure at the local level to be even whether the smallest fragmented or emerging community-based organization to be able to say, because you also had a point there that said, don't use old technology. So is the actual physical infrastructure of hardware, is that a challenge in your work at the community level? And how do you look at that issue of hardware in each of the other speakers? Can you speak to the issue of having the best possible fishing pole?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's something when we started this 2.5 years ago, we didn't even know what we were going to find. But when we got there and we realized they actually all have their laptops and everything, so it's not like they didn't. But some of them had dinosaurs, had very old laptops. So we realized that we actually had to convince them from the beginning that that was a worth investment. That, I mean, if you want a $10,000 grant, you need to invest $300 on getting a faster laptop. And they do. They actually listen to
that. So that you can access the sites that you need. Yeah, it's just gonna use GIS tools.
Yeah. We don't settle for, oh, then we'll send you hard copies. That's the part I was trying to say. We don't settle for trying to make their lives artificial. We don't think it's easy. It's artificial. I mean, it's gonna, if you can't communicate by email, if you can't access the internet efficiently, fast enough, if you can't deal with Excel spreadsheets, you're in big trouble. So we convince them that they have to have this basic knowledge.
So this is a community infrastructure capacity building that really puts the onus of making that investment that then you'll be able to show a return on that investment, and you can give some leverage to do that. Introduce yourself, please.
I'm Claudia Kaga. I'm in Fort Worth, Texas at the School of Public Health. Public Health, and I work with the Leadership, Emerging Leadership Institute in Texas. And I was wondering if you mentioned the Public Health Training Center, is the TEACH program within the PHTC?
Well,
PHTC, people know PHTC, sorry, they do not know, raise your hand. Okay, Public Health Training Center is a program funded by PHRSA. It goes traditionally to schools of public health, but that has been expanded since 2010. It does go to institutions of higher education, usually academic health science centers, to be the nexus for infrastructure development and capacity building for the public health workforce. Is that good enough? Mm-hmm. And there may be a second round in the spring to keep your eyes open. It's highly competitive. The hope is that there'll be a PHTC in every state in the country by 2012.
Well, Project TEACH started way before we got the training center. We just got one now.
Oh, okay.
We had our first team meeting last month. So it's kind of, Project TEACH is the model that we are trying to use. And we have Lisa here, who is also part of the group. So several groups that came together with different models of teaching for this group to do that. So Project TEACH is one of them.
Okay.
I'm going to pass over to help here. Is that right? Introduce yourself, sir.
My name is Mongye Wang. I'm from University of Connecticut Health Center. This question is for Jeff Dunn. As I understand it, you touched upon two areas. One is the blended learning, the other one is open government and open access. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the use of the, some of the tools that you mentioned under these two concepts, like social bookmarking, delicious, RSS feed, and some other things. What your thoughts are on the use of this in the context of public health work? Because you also mentioned the Sunlight Foundation. That's a great place to go for information, but the people I know only use the Sunlight Foundation website for looking up the information about the salary of the consultants. Like they go to Zillow to see, you know, what their neighbors pay for the house. So that I wonder how you can people can use these kind of tools for public health work.
Could you actually review a little bit of the tools again? Do we have, we've got Sunlight, we've got others, you know, places to go for open access to information. So remind us a little bit about that, and then let's play out, how does it play out for the practice of public health?
Yeah, the thing about open access to information is that, and this applies to public health workers, to people in academic settings, that the access to information is expanded exponentially and continues to, so that it's not just the public health worker who needs to find the expert information and communicate it out to the public. The public already has access, but they have access to bad information as well as to good information. So I think the challenge for public health workers is to is one of interpretation and being a reputable source and helping that filtering process and being engaged in these various online communities because everyone else is engaged. But the real challenge, and this gets to a question I had for the other panelists, the real challenge is the organizational and institutional barriers that are put in our way when we're in the workplace. In the state that I live in, the state health department will not let a state health department employee look at a YouTube video. They won't let them go to a delicious bookmarking page. And they can only do that when they go at home. But when they're at home, they're on their own time. So the broader philosophical question is, do we support the development of the workforce? And are we serious about that? But specifically regarding the tools, there's the two that I mentioned. I guess I mentioned those specifically because I use them the most, but RSS.
Everybody knows what delicious is? Put your hands up if you don't know. Thank you. If part of what we're here to do is dispel any myths about delicious is?
It's a social bookmarking site. Social bookmarking is, when I first got online in the early 90s, I had my favorites list. Well, I still do that, but instead of going to my favorites list, I go to my delicious tag, and I could do, I have like, I don't know, 80 tag websites that say system sciences, for instance, and the people who subscribe to my bookmarks can get regular updates to see what I'm looking at, and the people that I follow, I can see what they're looking at. So I follow an anthropologist, for instance, and I get information that I would have never found on my own. And likewise, the people who follow me find information that they may have never found. Mm-hmm. And the RSS feed is a way to remind me to go look at something. And
it prompts you.
Yeah, and it's that stands for real simple syndication. It's basically a syndication tool. And so I don't read too many newspapers. I get syndicated lists of articles in the areas that I need to pay attention to sent to my inbox or my phone. And I can read them, and I can discard a lot of them that I, with a few seconds, know I don't need to read. But I can get information pushed to me that's relevant for me. And to complicate this a little further, I can get my social bookmarks from Delicious sent to my RSS feed. So
right, exactly.
It's all very crazy and insane.
So there's two issues that are raised here in questions and a come up. The first issues and dilemmas, one is, what do people know is really out there as new tools and mechanisms? And given that it's rapidly expanding, how can our folks that are working in the engagement of community leadership and the empowerment of communities know all the complexities so that you can bring it home? And at the same time, I bet Jeff would say, they already know, just ask them. Because folks are not waiting for us to discover it, we'll come back to it. And the second is the bureaucratic, if you will, especially in government, with the assumption the only reason that you're using YouTube is to view porn or other barely sourced information that are irrelevant, although some in other sessions here at APHA might argue with you that that's not relevant, would say that it is important for us to be able to put some sort of demarcation between that which is professionally relevant information and that which stays within our personal time. And therefore, there is an assumption that some tools align with personal information and other tools align with professional information, and those boundaries are really getting blurry. So two very cool points. Let me take a question from here. Introduce yourself, please.
My name is Amish Parashar. I teach innovation at Stanford. A part of my bias may be that I live and work in Silicon Valley. Just a little bit.
Just maybe. She spent some time with us today.
Yeah. You posed a question that was, how can we do better on this front? Uh-huh. And it's a one-word answer, I think. It's collaboration. Uh-huh. And it's, just at a fundamental level, with no disrespect to the panelists, it's kind of prevalent in our... it's our profession in public health. I can't help but think we're a little bit behind the curve in this thing.
Oh,
right? It was 1992 when people in Northern California stopped building static websites, right? If you look at the web traffic today, it's Facebook and Google and YouTube, right? These are socially connected websites. It's not on us as public health professionals to be experts in all of that. I think it's on us to find the people who are and bring them on board.
Let me just play out the context of today's session is the question of how does this interface with leadership develop with public health? What do leaders need as those that are going to promote innovation and change the policies and rules? And so the leadership challenge is what we want to anchor this on, as opposed to what does it look like for the expansion of social technologies relative to the broader practice of public health. Our anchoring point in this session is the issue of leaders need to act and know and do. And so given that we are behind the curve, no one would argue about that, and particularly behind the curve within governmental public health, and particularly behind the curve oftentimes in rural and more remote areas where there is less infrastructure. So given that, what might be possibilities coming?
Yes, I really vouch for what he said, because these tools, my understanding, are actually on the decline. The use of them is on the decline. It's not dying.
No question.
But we don't have to be experts on it, but we can work with other people and then to find other experts and then to get up to a higher level. I'm actually a medical librarian by profession, and that's why I'm also interested in this.
So let me think about who those collaborators or partners are, and I'd be curious who you have partnered with and who we have partnered with. The National Library of Medicine, for example, and some of the medical librarians are available in many of our academic health science centers, and they can be our new best friends, and some of them are quite savvy in this area. As one. Give me some other ideas of what you found of people who already know more than you do, relative to the new technologies that can help in the science and practice of public health. Who else are the partners, Jeff?
I was trying to describe that earlier when I was talking about the Community Health Data Initiative, which is just what you were describing, where the developers and those technological expertise was being brought to the public with the public health expertise and brought together, and so that the public health experts were able to tell the development community kind of where the real need was, and then the innovation occurred within the development community. But it was that level of collaboration that led to the Community Health Data Initiative. And they also, the Public Health Information Network is a Ning-based platform that brings together all these people and gives them a space to collaborate. And the irony what you said about collaboration, as I heard you say your question, to me the irony that occurred to me was we've spent lots of time collaborating at the community level, but we're less expert at collaborating online. But there are a lot of people who know a lot more than us in that area that we can learn from and that we need to learn from. And I think it also speaks to the issue of digital literacy in the workforce overall, that needs to be integrated into the kinds of competencies that we say people need to work in public health.
Question over here. Introduce yourself, please.
So I'm Lisa Benner, I'm the executive director of the State Show here in Colorado, so we're the HO and we're part of the Public Health Training Center, the new Public Health Training Center here in Colorado. And you just made me think about, there's this, the experts that really have the information, the way to get the information, the tools, the knowledge. And then I think there's a really long way to get to the public health practitioner. If I think of our folks in rural Colorado, they're struggling every day to do fundamental basic public health and get clean water to their jurisdiction, let alone think about how to use delicious. So to me, there's a middle piece there, and that's the translators. And it's similar to research as well, right? Although we're engaged in practice-based research. But right now, we need translators. And that's sort of where we find ourselves. We are by no means the experts, and we're not those that are sitting on the ground doing the practice-based or the actual public health work. So how do we support translators is my question. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So how can we as translators learn more about what's going on there and then help thinking through how do I talk with someone about implementing that? Very simply, I'm thinking of, we definitely have the issue that we're not public health in Colorado about access to basic websites. You can't get on Facebook, you can't get on YouTube, all of that. So one of the things we said we would do in this next year is put together a social media template policy that our folks can go out to sit down with their county administrators, sit down with their IT folks and say, here's an actual policy that draws that line between the personal and the professional. We're sort of just making that up.
So there's a couple of collaborators right there.
Say more about
that. Somebody, if you're working in governmental public health, one of the collaborators you need is your IT staff.
Well, the Federation of America is a delta position. Right? It's like, this is a prevalent national scale issue, not a public health or Colorado specific issue. Right?
So noticing the difference and the gap, can you go a little further? Because you're not telling us what we don't know. We're probably fairly adapters in this room who address the issue of frustration that the majority culture of public health practitioners and the decision makers to whom we are accountable know even less than we do. So from a corporate and business perspective, how has that gap been leapfrogged over in a way that gets the leaders and the decision makers buy-in?
That's a tricky conference title, maybe, but you know that.
But you say we already know how to do it, so give some examples.
Well, sure. Would it be conceivable for a Google employee to not have access to a social network? Absolutely not. Right? They would not be able to perform their job without access, right, to a set of tools online, whatever they are. Right? If we're saying this access, one of the things you said you're working on is better access to these tools online. Right, I would say that the first stop for that type of thing is to find the people who are wrestling with that issue. Right, find those collaborators that have that. And it may be other public health professionals, it may be somebody in California that's an analogous organization of yours, but it could be somebody in the private sector. There are a lot of examples out there already. I think it's to your point, we don't have to read it.
Awesome.
Comments
here, Laura.
Maybe I want to go back to the community. First of all, I agree. I mean, we need to collaborate. That's the key thing. We don't want to invent or to think that we all know everything. Or we to start, it will be just a waste of time. We're going to start doing things from the beginning from scratch. So I think collaboration is the key thing. But I would like to go back to the question in terms of how do we train the how do we help the health workers that are out there in the community? So I'm talking now about the community that they don't have access to computers, that they're maybe in a very remote control. And talking a little bit about the mobile, for my surprise, you got a very good question at the beginning that who knows about
M-learning
and blended learning, and just a little bit, so I want to go a little bit deeper into the mobile learning, which I guess most of you didn't heard that before. Well, mobile learning, it was a tool that it was developed actually, in terms of public health, I'm talking about
to go directly to some of the projects in Africa that they didn't have access to. How do we send the messages in terms of e-learning, things like that? Well, our ET people came up with, ET people around the world came up with an idea that if we, they all have telephones, they do have telephones, they don't have computers, but they do have telephones. So if we can send through the telephone, the messages, the health promotion staff, meetings or whatever. So actually, there's a lot of evidence right now that say that that was effective because now people in countries that they don't have access to computers, they can use their mobile telephones to do that. So from their experience, we are now building on that experience and now using that as a tool to also do e-learning more sophisticated. We can actually set up the whole e-learning course and send it through your email or to your to your mobile or to your iPod or whatever device you have, your BlackBerry. So people are actually learning now complete courses through their mobile. They don't even know how to need a computer anymore. That's one of the tools that, and I think it's very effective when communities, they don't have access to computer. Because the problems in some of our low countries, they sometimes we do have the computer, a very good computer, but we don't have the connection. So the problem is not the connection, not the computer. So, mm-hmm. So it's a lot of things that we really need to face. And as leaders again, we need to team up with ideas of how to solve these problems. Because I think that's the goal.
So have you found that the decision makers who make policy, allocate resource, decide what the rules shall be, and the paradigms of basic learning, whether that's our deans of schools of public health or whether that's our county commissioners, to what degree are the decision makers for the support and diffusion of this new methodology and approach, to what degree are they knowledgeable about, well, I'm talking within public health, what have you found them knowledgeable and savvy about the whole world of technology and learning? What's your experience? Are county commissioners well-versed in M-learning? Do you find that the deans that are sitting in a different building here, the schools of public health, that are making decisions about how pedagogy will play out within our traditional schools of public health, do they get this stuff? I'm curious, because if the people who are in leadership roles don't know, then and they hold the levers of power and control, well, how will it change? So I'm curious about whether that's an opportunity or an impediment, and if not, how can some of the informal leaders, the less positional leaders, be greater advocates to move towards more nimble technology? Mm-hmm. Yeah, experience.
I guess
introduce yourself. Go ahead, Trish. Why don't you start?
Trisha Tatt, University of Minnesota, and the University of Information Institute. I think it depends. It depends where you are. It depends, you know, you talked about the role. It really depends on where you're at. I know at the University of Minnesota, we just had a very interesting, it goes back to the collaboration suggestion, is not only do you need to collaborate on the front end and even decide what you want to use and how you want to use it, but we actually at the University of Minnesota instituted Google Mail for the students. Great idea, right? Wonderful. Turns out we didn't have some of the types of protections we needed to address the FERPA, and, which are the rules around student privacy. And all of a sudden we have problems, whole loads of problems. So I think you having the right people at the table as you're discussing not only the creation of the technologies, but the application of those technologies, so that you don't have backroom challenges like we have, you know, I mean, after we put a lot of money into it. So, and that may be your lawyers, you know, your accountants, your, you know, some of the people you just don't think you need to have at the table when you're going to institute the technologies.
Okay.
My comment was a little bit broader, and I think I was just going to say that I think some of these challenges are to do with the composition of the public health workforce in the nation, and that what we're seeing is that it's a fairly old workforce, and that's why we are maybe laggards in terms of adopting some of these technologies, but there's going to be a massive turnover in the next 5 to 10 years. I also think that it's one of the key reasons why there needs to be collaboration in the public health training centres between practice-based organisations and academic or higher ed, and looking at broadening that collaboration out to the IT private sector. Because
I don't see the connection between, it's very patchy depending on where you are, between academia and public health practice, state, county, tribal health departments. Mm-hmm. It's just two comments I have.
I work with very forward-thinking leaders from across the country in the Public Health Leadership Institute, so I don't think I have a very representative sample. Those leaders are all very interested in new technology. I think their organizations are a lot less are less interested than they are. Mm-hmm. The lawyers and the IT department and the boards. And I also would say that, we're in a pretty conservative, we're in some conservative circles with governmental public health, academia, and healthcare. Not leading the charge. Privacy issue is a big driver.
I want to ask for a prediction to the larger group and then ask at each of our presenters if they would give us a final take-home comment overall, because we're at the top of our hour. You had noted that that many of these technologies, the words you use, are in the decline. You know, that they peak and they trough back over. Can we imagine what might be some of the emergent technology most relevant to advancing the public's health that we, and especially in terms of being able to impact well-being, that we could at least put a quick crystal ball prediction up? So I was wondering if there was a follow-up to your comment and others, given the collective intelligence in the room. You want to start us off?
Yeah, the one thing I know, a lot of people are switching from LinkedIn to LinkedIn, which is really a place for professionals. Like, you know, people, instead of going to Facebook, they go to LinkedIn.
Okay, so that's one. Is there any other predictions or movements that you're seeing that say in the technology, the applications, the hardware, software, we should be on the lookout? I've got one here. Why not? The organizations guy.
I have a list, but personalized health is a huge deal now. They're mapping skills that automatically upload, you know, trend lines to websites. You know, interconnected bathroom skills, for God's sake. Right? So this, you know, if that's the case, what about things like blood glucose monitors? What about other devices that have been interconnected? It's a whole new world of data out there.
And looking at both from the personal health level and the aggregate in terms of population health. Thank you very much, Trish.
Health Buddy is being used by patients.
I'm sorry, say it.
Health Buddy being used by patients at homes all the time, and doctors can literally call. They can do everything from blood to, you know, the various testing. But there's also the chip that is being put in some kids that are developmentally disabled that literally we can read multiple.
So the issue is that technology will continue to web and flow and to grow, and our job is to figure out how to stay ahead of the curve, not only in terms of their actual use, but in terms of that which can be informed by leaders to be able to support what might be new systems development. A last closing comment, I'm going to start with Jeff and move right on down. One parting comment as we walk out with these folks that you want them to take out of the room today.
I see the leadership challenge is twofold. One is to model an experiment and promote experimentation, but also to really instill a sense of reinstill a sense of honor in public service to allow experimentation to be supported. That it's as much the attitude towards public sector and public work that needs to be addressed as it is issues related to technology.
Very helpful. Thank you. Angela.
Well, I would like just to thank the panelists and everyone for the new things I'm going to be teaching to the community in 2 days. So I'll learn as much as I can. And the other is help with the challenge of getting money to these communities ahead of time. I mean, they need these things to ask for grants to have money. But the problem is that they need money to get those things to have grants to get money. And that seed money is not helping. So I think it's a service that academic groups, and I'm an academician, need to provide to communities. I think we need to be the ones giving that seed thing to the community so they can get the money to get more technology.
Thank you so much, Laura.
One thing that my last remark will be just to, we need to share as leaders, we need to communicate each other to construct things together.
in an equal basis. We are, I mean, taking into consideration the community, the other countries, the other actors in the sector. We really need to work together, including everybody in
there. Excellent. I would just add that the word leapfrog, we may be behind the curve, but when you're behind the curve, you have the opportunity to see what's ahead of you, and not just getting queued in line, leaders, in fact, will leapfrog over. So I could predict that in promoting and protecting the public's health and maximizing the power of technology to learn, to network, to engage each other, we actually have one of the greatest opportunities in public health because, in fact, we're going to do it for the right reason, for the greater good, and that will allow us to be in a position to maximize not only what's known now, but what's known next. Thank you for being learners with us.